It was felt that I should plunge my heart into Long Island. When the word was received of their feelings, there were six sets of knees bent in our living room in Dallas, Texas, in prayer. From the 5-year-old boy to the 13-year-old boy, this was their decision too. We knew the difficulty. We knew the heartbreak. We knew the disappointments. But they made the choice, and we're there. In all of this loneliness, we still are able to keep a sense of humor in all of it. Our little girl the other day, who broke her leg in six places tangling up with her bicycle, asked me and said, "Daddy, what does the term reverend mean?" That's an unusual question. I said, "Well, I guess it was years ago when they thought that a preacher, being a holy man of God, should have a term of reverence to identify him. And I guess they just thought of him as a holy man of God." Our little 6-year-old boy now looked up to me and said, "Daddy, you're not a holy man of God. You're a Baptist preacher." And I thank God for our children who have helped us through those days. What do we need? We need prayer above all things from every Southern Baptist across our convention. We are faced right now in Farmingdale with a building crisis. For last week, we were told by the fire department that we had to evacuate the second story of our children's building, eliminating two nurseries and a beginner department. We had to evacuate the basement where our junior department meets. And we are being forced into a building program now and must have the building built by the 1st of August, in addition thereto to a $70,000 indebtedness we have. But our people came out of a business session the other night feeling so spirit-filled that they're ready to tackle this, not knowing from whence it will come nor how it will be done and how we need your prayers. I hold in my hand the building fund of Farmingdale Baptist Church, one silver dollar. It was given to me by an agnostic Jewess the other night when I knelt in their home and had prayer. We need preachers from every corner of this convention to come and help us and break ties, to be willing to come and tell the story in difficult places. We need school teachers to come and bolster this great teaching need. We need patience that can only come from above, and through your prayers, we believe that patience will be provided. We need provisions from great sources, and you, with your heart burdened to the pioneer field from the northwest to the northeast, will make it possible. And how we need property to start new churches in a land that needs it, where no churches are being started at all. We are not our own to go or stay. We are his to follow as he leads the way.
In a moment now, we're going to stand to sing together the hymn of the 30,000 movement, "To God Be the Glory." Following that hymn, our Executive Secretary of the Home Mission Board, Dr. Corch Redford, will speak on our churches reaching out, our hope. And following his message will be our closing meditation on the harp by Miss Julia Louise Herman. I hope you do not have to go, but if you do, let it be during the singing of this hymn, and let no one leave following the singing of "To God Be the Glory." All right, Ms. Grooms.
Let us stand and sing hymn number 31. Hymn number 31.
To God be the glory, great things he hath done, so lofty the world that he gave us the Son, who yielded his life's a redemption, our sin, and opened the life gate, and now we come in praise.
Madam President, Miss Hunt, and all you other good friends, it's a great privilege to be here this afternoon to bring a message to Women's Missionary Union. First of all, I want to thank you for the Annie Armstrong offering. I think Miss Hunt was just a little mistaken in the total amount that we've received, and inasmuch as it's more than she indicated, I'm certainly glad she's mistaken. I think we've received to date about $1,492,637. We do not have the amount received at this exact time a year ago. This was as of May the 17th. But as of May the 12th, the last year, we had received $1,074,128. So we have received as of the 17th, as compared to the 12th of last year, $418,509, more than we had received last year. I'm so deeply grateful to you for the marvelous job you did in putting on this Annie Armstrong offering and the March Week of Prayer. And I want to tell you this afternoon that I appreciate, perhaps even more than the offering, your prayers for our missionaries and for our work. You know, the greatest asset we have in home missions, not in the money we have, not in that wonderful building yonder at our headquarters, not in the buildings out in the field, but the greatest asset we have is in the missionaries. 2,010 of them working yonder in every state of the United States and Cuba and Panama and the Canal Zone, Alaska, Hawaii. My friends, last year these missionaries of yours reported over 51,000 professions of faith. And during the last 6 years, they've reported over 260,000 people won to the Lord. The greatest asset we have are our missionaries. And I thank God for them. And I thank God for your prayers and your interest and your concern. Another thing to which I'd call your attention this afternoon is our reception that we're having yonder in the Crystal Room of the Sheridan Jefferson Hotel on Wednesday afternoon from 3 to 5. I want to give every one of you a most urgent invitation to come and meet some of these missionaries, have fellowship with us in that period together, the Crystal Room of the Jefferson Hotel. I would like to call your attention, too, to this little button. I suppose you'd say you can't see it from back there, but it says 1 of 30,000. I want every one of you who belongs to a church that has been started since the 30,000 movements began, or it belongs to a church that has sponsored some church. I want you to wear one of these buttons during this convention. You'll get them at the home mission booth at the convention. And you get one of these buttons, you wear it, and let hundreds of people be asking, what does it mean, 1 of 30,000? And you can tell them. Now, I remember the story, all right, of the preacher. They asked him how he outlined his sermon. And he said, well, I have 3 points. The first point is I tell them what I'm going to say. The second point is I say it. And the third point is I tell them what I've said. Well, I'm going to cut out about 2 of those points this afternoon. We are going to be going on our way in a very short time. But I want to tell you the first thing that I was going to say, God's been good to us. You know, for the last 6 years, Southern Baptists have averaged 2 new churches every day for those 6 years. We baptized 1,100 people every day for 6 years. We've laid yonder on the altar $8.5 million every week for 6 long years. God's been good to Southern Baptist, but unto whomsoever much is given will much be required. God's expecting something great of us. The second thing I want to say is that we have many perils that face us here in this land today. I'm not going to take time this afternoon. Here's page 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11. I'm going to put all those aside, but I want you to know it. We cannot give to the world that which we do not have ourselves. My friends, if America is to continue, we must have a spiritual awakening in this land of ours. There is one part here that I want to lay aside and bring to your attention just a little later. And that is a letter that I have received recently from Brother Herbert Caudle down in Cuba. And I want to read to you, as I come to close this afternoon, a little later, that letter. As I come this afternoon to another portion of this, I come to the heart of the message, namely, what are we to do in reaching out to start 30,000 new churches and mission stations? Of course, in 1962, we're giving a special emphasis to church extension. It's part of the 30,000 movement. We hope to start at least 6,000 new churches and mission stations, approximately 2,000 churches, 4,000 mission stations in this 1 year. I want to say just three things about it. The first one is they are needed. They're needed. There are at least 30,000 communities in the United States without a Baptist church of any kind. At least 25 million people are out of reach of any Baptist church that can serve them. You know, there are 100,000 Jewish babies born in the United States every year, and there are more Jews in New York City than they are yonder in Palestine. Yet we have great areas of Jewish population, such, for instance, as yonder in Miami, where there's 100,000 Jews with just one Baptist church in that area. There are more Catholics in Chicago and in Rome, Italy. Yet most of the areas where Catholics are strongest, we now have no Baptist witness at all. Why should we carry the gospel yonder to foreign lands and fail to carry it to those in our own land? You see, about 1/4 of the total population of the United States live in the 10 northeastern states. There are only 3,600 Baptist churches of all kinds to serve these multitudes. If the area were as well churched as our Southland, we would have to have 8 times as many churches in those 10 northeastern states as we now have. Perhaps no more than 1/10 of our language people are served by any Baptist church. You see, these groups, in many cases, are increasing even twice as rapidly as our white population. During the past 10 years, Japanese, Chinese have increased over 40% in population. How important it is that we minister to them. And yet, my friends, there are literally thousands of these communities in which there's not a Baptist witness of any kind. There are enough children from Southern Baptist homes coming to the years of accountability each year to constitute 730 Baptist churches of average size. Just these children coming to the years of accountability from Baptist homes. Yet we have never started that many churches in 1 year yet. We are getting further behind all the time. There are enough people moving to California in a 5-year period to form a state the size of the state of Georgia. Georgia has more than 3,000 Southern Baptist churches. With the great multitudes already unchurched in California and with the great influx of population, we should start at least 3,000 new churches in California in the next 5 years, and that would be 600 every year in that one state. You see, the thousands of missions are needed where churches may one day be constituted, and thousands of others are needed where churches may never be established. Institutional missions of various kinds. Surely, surely, there remaineth much to be done, very much land to be possessed. Second, I want to say that the new churches, missions, pay great dividends in kingdom building. You want to put your money where it counts for the most. You want to put your energies where they'll bring the greatest glory to your Lord. The new churches win more people to the Lord. Recent years, the 40 new churches that were started in Birmingham, Alabama, reported one baptism for 8 members. The older churches reported 1 to 27 members. And all the territory added to the Southern Baptist Convention since 1940, the baptismal rate in 1959 was 1 to 14. In the older section of the convention, it was 1 to 27. These new churches, on an average, are winning twice as many people to the Lord as the older churches. In 1960, the old churches increased in Sunday school enrollment an average of 3.5 members per church, and that's all. Sunday school enrollment, 3.5 members per church increase. But in the new churches, they increase 60 members per church. You want to make your money count for the most? You want to make your efforts count? Start new churches and new missions. In the areas that are added since 1940, the churches started last year, one new church for every 16 churches they have. See, that's all this territory in the west, all yonder in the north, all yonder in the great northeast. In all that territory, they started one new church for every 16 churches they had. How many you suppose were started in the old south, in the 19 southern states? They started one to every 106 churches they have. You want your efforts to count? Put them in new churches and mission stations. New churches use more members. They add more by letter. They give more per capita. They enlist more in stewardship. If we add 10,000 new churches and 20,000 missions by the end of 1964, these new work projects, just the new churches now, just the ones that were added during this period, will have 1,770,000 members. They will be adding 430,000 members every year. They will be baptizing 194,500 people every 12 months. They will give to the Lord's work $143 million every year. And they will give to missions $16 million every 12 months. I tell you, my friends, new missions, new churches pay. And the last thing I want to say is that we can do it. We can do it. The Harvey Baptist Church in Chicago area started in 1943. 17 years have passed. During 17 years, they've started 12 new churches. Those 12 churches have started 12 other churches. And one of those churches started 2 more. Saw it since 1943 with one church. We have come to that place where we have 27. It can be done. The First Southern Baptist Church in Chicago, organized in 1950 with only 11 members in a downtown store building. One of the pastors, visiting pastor, passing by, said it isn't worth a cent. But my friends, that church yonder in Chicago has started four other churches. They have started two others. So that in 10 years, we have seven churches there that grew out of the efforts of 11 members. It can be done. Yonder in New York City and the New York area, we called attention to what was being done there. Started in 1958, 99 members in the Manhattan Baptist Church. And now then, they have 24 missions and churches that have come out of that church. Why, they had 99 members about 3 years ago. They now have about 2,000 members in these churches and missions. My friends, it can be done. Yonder in Miami, Florida, there's been a great influx of Spanish-speaking people. They haven't all come from Cuba. They've come from all the South American countries. Until today, there are 100,000 people there from Latin American origin. They have about 8,000 of those people moving into Miami every year. They started back there with just two missions. But now then, 24% of all the organized Baptist churches, the white churches, Anglo churches in Miami, 24% of them have missions for Spanish-speaking people. It can be done. My friends, there's not a one of you here that comes from any church cannot go back and have your church and your people start a mission somewhere for the glory of God. How are we going to do it? First of all, we need to survey the needs, see what they are. We need to appoint a mission committee in the association and a mission committee in the church that through these committees we may go about this task of locating the new place and enlisting the people to do an effective job. We get sponsoring churches for these new missions. We have to start them through the work of students and through the work of the brotherhood people that are going out, through the work of our Sunday school board and some retired workers, and through the tent makers. I had the privilege just the other day of talking to a young man that will be retiring from military service just a year or so. You know, they retire 20 years. He'll be 41 years of age when he retires. He said nothing would please me more than to go out and begin starting new missions out yonder. I'll have an income. Just a little bit would help. Tent makers going out yonder with other sources of income start these new missions. We must get good sights. I'm so glad that Miss Hunt emphasized that a moment ago. One of the best investments Southern Baptists can make is to buy enough land in the right place at the right time and thus save Southern Baptists literally millions of dollars and see to it that their churches are properly located. We need pastoral support. I thank the Lord for what you're giving out of this year's offering for pastoral support, but I hope as we come to next year, after having started these new churches, that we can have even much more in order that we may put good pastors in these new churches. Loans for the church buildings. I'm praying, and I want you to join me in prayer, that God will open the way and prepare some plan whereby we can meet this desperate need. We need your prayers and your interest and your concern. My friends, do we really care? We can do it any time we want to. I remember some years ago, well, it's been many years ago now, hearing Miss Mallory speak. And she told the story of that little Russian girl. She'd visited Russia, and she'd seen this little girl. And she talked to the little girl and said now you have a lovely dress. Said, how many dresses do you have? The little girl said, I just have one. She said, how is it that you can keep it looking so nicely? Well, she said, I wear it every day and wash it every night, iron it every morning, wear it the next day. She looked at her shoes. They were all worn out. She said, dear, when are you going to get some more shoes? Well, she said, I won't get more shoes for 3 or 4 months. Winter was coming on. Miss Mallory said, well, dear, said, your feet will get mighty cold. Said, winter's coming on. And said the little girl looked up with disgust in her face, in her eyes, as she said, who cares anything about shoes when we're building a country? And then the question came, do we have a dedication that will match that? And many has been the time I've been tempted to say, no, we do not have it. Yet, my friends, when the testing time comes, perhaps we do. I want to read in closing a portion of this letter from Herbert Caudill, who is serving, as you know, as director, superintendent of our mission work, yonder in Cuba. He says, I feel that it is very important in this very critical period in Cuban history that we give the very best possible Christian testimony. As far as I can tell, our people have not had to suffer because they were Christians. In fact, he writes, I find that the fact that I'm a Christian is my strength. And I might stop just here to say that they face many uncertainties in Cuba. But we are so grateful that during this past year, great wave of evangelism has swept the island. And there in Havana, they had a great revival meeting in which there were more than 2,500 professions of faith, an average of 45 for each church. It's been more or less that way throughout the island. I'm saying that we need to be praying for those people while the door is open, for we know not when that door may be closed. And these are the words from Herbert. However, if we should have to suffer as Christians, it would not be the first time that Christians suffered for their faith. As new conditions develop here, it will be to the advantage of the work that we have been diligent in trying times and carrying out the work that we've been doing all the time. Perhaps this is the right time for a great advance in the gospel in the heart of Cubans. And in another recent letter, he writes these words. I believe that God wants us here in Cuba. We had told them if they felt they should come home to feel free to come. As we have told all of our missionaries there, we have 6 American missionaries there, 2 couples, 2 single ladies. I believe that God wants us here in Cuba, and one is never so safe as when he's in the center of God's will. Oh, my friends, may we go out tonight to take our place yonder in the center of God's will, do with our resources, and do with our talents, and do with life itself what the Lord would have us do.